So, a second time around, having this conversation, and I think probably for people who watched the Democracy Unplugged, there was too many threads to that conversation. And you yourself felt that it was too many parts to a single conversation. And so I'd like to pick this conversation up from an understanding on your side. What do you think the South African public have incorrect about AfriForum?
Well, I think firstly, the media landscape that we find ourselves in is ill-suited to talk about complex topics. I think the radio environment of 5-minute interviews and 30-second sound bites, even in television, mainstream television, is also at most maybe 30 minutes of a panel discussion. Maybe if it's a very popular host, an hour-long panel discussion, but then there's multiple guests on that panel, which means you get 10 minutes, 15 minutes total speaking time on incredibly complex and nuanced topics. And I think AfriForum stances on many things are all by nature complex and nuanced, which means that maybe we're already fighting a battle with one arm tied behind your back when you're in an environment where you need nuance and time to be able to explain the complexities, but everything is being pushed into a 5-minute clip or into a little sound bite or into political sloganeering. Now, to answer that question, what do people maybe get wrong about AfriForum? I think there's many things, many misunderstandings, a lot of misinformation out there about AfriForum. But I think there's some broad things that I think are important to clear up. Firstly, I think, why does AfriForum exist? Well, AfriForum exists as a symptom of the 21st century South Africa to a large extent, where you have a government that it has many responsibilities that it takes up upon itself: electricity generation, fighting crime, water supply, keeping streets clean, all these responsibilities that the government wants to take up, but is simply not proving to have the capacity to do. I think one of the stories from South Africa has been a story of government capacity decay. I think all of us, no matter where in South Africa you live, you've been the victim of some form of government capacity decay, some form of service delivery that you should be in a normal society receiving, but for some reason, for the past 2 weeks or past months, or maybe even never, you've received that service that the government should be providing. And there's really only two responses to that situation. On the one side, you can continue to pressure government and ask government, well, you took up the responsibility to provide the service delivery, you should be doing your job. And on the other side is, well, you can do something about it yourself. And that's the school of thought where AfriForum comes from. So I think there's a very clear divide in regards to how people in South Africa see, how different groups in South Africa see how you bring about change. I think a very large proportion of South Africans see party politics as the only avenue as to bring about change, seeing as every 4 years or every interim election and every major national election you go and you vote, and that's your only way as a citizen to really bring about change. And if your party doesn't win, well, then you're going to have to vote harder next time. Well, AfriForum's whole philosophy, and I think this is where the main misconception comes in, is, well, where do you fit in? Why aren't you a political party? Well, AfriForum is very specifically an alternative to the political party system. Doesn't mean that we are against democracy or tell our members not to vote. Our members actually go out to vote in very large numbers. But our whole philosophy is party politics have not been able to effectively bring about major changes in many aspects in South Africa. Therefore, we need an alternative approach adjacent to that model. So I think that's the major misconception that I'd like to start off with is, well, why do you exist? Well, we exist as an alternative road to change for many people that feel let down by the party politics system.
And so you feel adjacent to democracy or adjacent to government?
Supplement to democracy, I think, is a better word. As you would be able to drive from Johannesburg to Bloemfontein through many different ways, or from Johannesburg to Cape Town in many different ways, you can get there by driving different roads, and AfriForum is just a different avenue or road to get there. Same as the way that I drove here from Centurion. I could have taken many different routes. I chose a particular route, but I had many alternatives to my as options, and AfriForum is just providing that alternative avenue.
So AfriForum, when was AfriForum founded?
AfriForum was founded in 2006, but it is part of a larger solidarity movement. So the solidarity movement was founded in 1997, founded firstly as a trade union called Solidaritate. And
which is a little bit older than 1997.
Yes. Well, Solidaritate was founded in 1997, but it came out of the mine workers union that was founded in 1902. So Solidaritate grew as a trade union, particularly an Afrikaans and Christian trade union. And then the trade union realized, well, there's so many other avenues or so many other areas that we want to enact change in. But as a trade union, you can only spread your resources or stretch your resources so thin before you start taking part in areas of society where a trade union really doesn't fit in. Like, for example, civil society or constitutional rights cases, community-based security, community-based cleanup initiatives. So the solidarity movement then starts creating all these specializing organizations. AfriForum is one of them. AfriForum is started in 2006 as a civil rights organization and then also as a community-based solutions organization, which is our primary description if you were to sum up what AfriForum does. But there's many other organizations within the solidarity movement that all specialize in different things. SolTech.
So before we talk about SolTech.
Sure.
Part of the reason we find ourselves here today is the South African, for a lot of South Africans, the solidarity, the intersection between Solidaritate and AfriForum and what we see coming back at us from America. Is what has got a lot of South Africans quite riled up, as it were, because the messaging is the same. The messaging that we hear being beamed back to South Africa, and also because there have been quite a lot of individuals within the organization, and your former deputy CEO has been very vocal in all the work that you've done over the past 10 years, as it were. Of being out in the world, in your own words, to raise awareness of what you believe is wrong with South Africa. And for a lot of South Africans, myself included, the question is, so when you are out in the world, what would you like all of those other people to do?
The people out there in the world or people out there in South Africa?
No, in the world. Mm. So as you are on drives in the US, in Australia, in Europe, what is it that you would like to see those individuals do in response to the message that you are giving them that cannot be done here with your neighbors and fellow South Africans?
Mm. So I think firstly, again, why does AfriForum and the solidarity movement have an international liaison element to our campaigns? Well, I think that it's because of it's because of a major failing within the South African political environment. And that major failing is the fact that we for many years tried to solve everything exclusively in South Africa through engagement with the government, through engagement with those in power, through engagement with those in positions of power to make a difference. And we've been just given a cold shoulder. We've been ignored. Our issues that we are trying to bring attention to have been minimized or even denied. And it again brings you at a crossroads. When, let's take, for example, the delegation that we sent to the United States. It's not something that we woke up one morning and decided, well, let's go do this. It is a symptom of a much longer process of engaging with the government and the government just arrogantly saying, well, we're not going to give any attention to the issues that you and your members care very deeply about. Let's take, for example, the issue of the Expropriation Act. At the very center, one of the things at the very center of this whole diplomatic crisis between the United States and South Africa. Already last year, we wrote a letter to the president saying, let us engage about this legislation. We have very serious concerns about it. Our members have very serious concerns about it. And we got a notification that our letter was received. No response in regards
to
that.
I hear that.
And that's one example.
I haven't heard the answer of what you would like to see them do. How would you like to see them?
I'm building up to that. But the context is very important because that informs what we want people out there to do. So when you take, and for example, again, before we visited the United States this year, again, long before that, we sent a letter again to the president saying we want to engage on these issues. Got a response saying we received your letter. That's all we got. Same with the whole issue around the Bella Act. Again, made had an agreement with the government in regards to the Bella Act that addressed our concerns, and then that agreement is just simply ignored. It is even lied about and said, well, no agreement like this was signed, even though we have the proof that it was. So you take all of that. Also, the years before that, years and years of trying to engage with the government and being ignored, then you get to the point where you say, well, now we need to take this internationally. If the government does not want to engage with us locally, we are going to have to up the pressure on the government so that they are forced to engage with us in South Africa. Because at some point, you only have one of two choices. You can either lay down and die and just accept that, well, we're just going to have to give up, or you try an alternative way to actually get attention being given to the issues that you care about.
So what would you like to see them do?
When it comes to their...
When you go out and speak to all of your constituents outside of South Africa...
Well, we don't have constituents outside of South Africa.
Well, stakeholders, friends.
Stakeholders also... I mean, it implies...
They're not your friends?
They're friends, but stakeholders is someone that is like has a stake in your organization.
But a person who has a stake does not necessarily own part of your organization, but they have a shared interest. That is what stakeholders are about, a shared interest. Often, but that's okay.
No.
My question remains.
Our contacts.
So when you speak to your contacts internationally and tell them, this is the problem we have, this is how we would like you to help us, what is that? What do you want them to do?
Yeah. Well, there's different.
What were you asking them to
do? Yes, there's different groups and individuals out there that we have conversations with. But let's take the United States as an example in this context where we find ourselves now. What we want from the United States is to put pressure on the South African government to actually not institute, to amend, for example, these radical extremist policies that they are pushing, to not continue with them, or to at least amend them very seriously that they no longer threaten private property rights or minority rights or language, the languages of minorities in South Africa. And then that's the broad... the broad summary, but what does that pressure look like? Well, that pressure looks like targeted sanctions on those politicians that are pushing these policies. That doesn't mean that these are sanctions put on South Africa as a whole. These are sanctions that are put on individuals that are pushing destructive policies, individuals that are inciting violence against minorities, individuals that are getting away with gross levels of corruption, and individuals that are actively sabotaging the interests of South Africa. I think it's the only way to really...
South Africa's democracy is a proportional representation democracy. And all our laws go through consultative processes. Mm-hmm. And in all those consultative processes, you feel that you have been consulted.
Mm-hmm.
You put forward what you believed and what you wanted was not taken into consideration.
Well, not just us. There were many organizations and individuals that with all of these pieces of legislation that we very deeply care about and are worried about that raised very serious concerns, and the government simply ignored all of those concerns. Just because the process of consultation exists doesn't mean that then at the end of that process when they say, well, we've heard all your inputs, we're not going to take any of your inputs seriously, we're going to go forward with this legislation, that doesn't mean that now it just should be accepted that, you tried.
So democracy, as it works in South Africa today, you feel does not work for your constituency.
I feel that the system in South Africa today empowers politicians to just ram through radical populist policies that hurt the country and its people, and a lot of especially minority groups don't really have mechanisms to be able to safeguard against policies that threaten their rights. I think especially as we discussed right now, we see exactly the failings of it. If a minority group is very, for example, is very concerned about a piece of legislation that threatens their language, but the government can just look at that minority and say, well, you are the minority. We're not going to take your concerns seriously. We are, in quotes, representing the majority. Who's there to protect?
Why is it in quotes that that's often
the type of rhetoric that politicians use. Often politicians say, well, we represent the majority, you are the minority, therefore your concerns are not going to be taken into account. That's really what happens often in South Africa. So then my question is, what mechanisms are there then for the protection of those minorities in such a system?
So then the response that you have received and the response that many South Africans are seeing as an attack on what they believe. And a particular response that has said, well, there's an opportunity. There's an opportunity if you feel that the democracy and the way that it is run in South Africa is not working for you and your constituency. There's an opportunity for you to extricate yourself from that.
Extricate in what sense?
In refugee status is what Donald Trump has spoken about. And has said, well, we are happy to offer you refugee status here in this country if that does not work. And the response, what has been interesting for me is seeing the response on many fronts, not just black people, but also white people, Afrikaans people, on social media, in the news, in newspaper, Netwerk 24, all of those guys saying that is not what we want. We want to be in South Africa, but we want South Africa to work for us.
I don't think work for us is the right summary. Rather, just that our basic rights aren't threatened. And I think there's a disappointing misunderstanding that some people demonstrate when they say, well, if South Africa is so bad, why don't you just leave? But I mean, there's a Moroccan saying that goes, my country is my country, even when I am not treated fairly there. White South Africans are just as at home in South Africa as any other group in South Africa. I mean, my family has been in South Africa since 1688, before the United States was a country. I'm the ninth generation of my family in South Africa. So to then just simply, after all of that history, all of that ties to South Africa, tell someone because they have serious concerns about how they are being treated by their government, say, well, why don't you just leave? I think that shows a very serious lack of empathy from some people, that you can't empathize that someone is genuinely feels that they are being targeted by their government, being discriminated by their government, not being treated fairly, and then the only response is, well, then you should just leave rather than let's sort out this problem. Let's actually hear, let's talk about what this is that is concerning you.
Do you feel that the democratic process and project in South Africa has failed?
Well, it really depends on what was the democratic process to begin with. Is it, if it was just to give South Africans the right to vote in regards to deciding which parties in the end gain political power, I don't think it's been a failure. I think it has actually functioned exactly as it says on the box, as it says on the tin. I think there's been a lot of failures in regards to particularly minorities not being protected against when a government becomes more increasingly populist, when a government becomes increasingly threatening towards things like language, towards things like private property rights. And I think, unfortunately, with, for example, the court case regarding Kill the Boer, I think the fact that even, well, two things there, the fact that the Constitutional Court did not bring itself to defend minorities when there's incitement of violence against them is deeply disappointing. I would have thought that that at very least we could all agree that we should not be inciting violence against anyone in a country based on their identity. And then the other thing is the fact that the president, when AfriForum again recently wrote a letter asking the president, at the very least, after Julius Malema again on human rights, they sang, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. AfriForum simply requested the president, can you please condemn this chant as wrong? Not ban it or make it illegal, just simply say it's wrong, we do not support it. And the response from the president's office was no, the president is not going to condemn this chant. At what point then do you really, as a minority, feel that you are in any way being protected? I feel that when you take all these things into account, it really feels like being a minority group, whether that be a linguistic minority group, a racial minority group, a cultural minority group, etc., in South Africa means it really means that you're a second-class citizen when it comes to concerns that affect you. It's fine when politicians chant about murdering you. It's fine when there are laws instituted that discriminate against you. It's fine when your property rights are threatened. It's fine when violent crime phenomena that particularly affect your community are downplayed or even outright denied. Like nowhere I see any form of compromise in terms of maybe you have legitimate concerns. Let's talk about it. Everywhere, at every single turn, it's just, shut up, sit in your corner, you are a minority, your concerns take second, third, or even fourth place of concern priority.
So then, what is the solution? How do we go forward?
Yeah.
How do we go forward mm-hmm. when the solutions mm. on the table do mm-hmm. not suit you? How do we go forward?
Well, there's quite a few things in going forward. On the one side, there actually needs to be constitutional protections for minority rights in South Africa in regards to you can't incite – well, there should be – firstly, there should be protections that you should not be able to incite violence against anyone based on their identity. There should not be groups that it is acceptable to incite violence against. Secondly, when it comes to the issues that are raised, particularly by minority groups, it should not just be written off as this is not important because you are not the majority. It should be, well, everyone's concern should be heard. Everyone's concern should be taken into account. When a piece of legislation is pushed, like, for example, the Bella Act, where minority groups in their thousands, in mass, say, we have a serious issue with this legislation. It threatens us existentially. And the government's response is simply shut up and take it. That's not a fair system.
So my question mm-hmm. to you
yes.
is the framework mm. within which to change legislation
mm-hmm. yes.
is participating mm. in government.
Well,
participating.
That's one avenue, yes.
That is one avenue. Mm. That is, in yeah. fact, that is the most acceptable mm. today in South Africa. The process, yeah. the framework today.
Mm-hmm.
to change legislation right up to constitutional amendments mm. happen within a particular framework.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying you don't want to participate in that framework? You want your own framework?
I think that framework has failed minorities in this country, unfortunately. And I mean, then it's not surprising when minorities opt out and say, well, what's the point of going to court if the constitutional court is not even going to defend you against incitement of violence? Like, that's a very serious issue and it needs to be addressed. I mean, at some point, someone has...
What do you mean opt-out?
Can I just... No, just I want to finish there and I'll get to your question as well. At some point, someone has to stand up and say... Someone outside of the targeted minority groups must stand up and say, this is not right, even though I am not targeted by this legislation, even though I'm not being chanted about, being murdered about, this is not right. There needs to be a change where we actually give at least some acknowledgement that maybe the issues that affect certain groups in this country are legitimate when they say these things are affecting us. Maybe we shouldn't just write it off because you're a part of this group or you speak this language or you have this culture. Maybe we should be actually treating everyone on the same level in regards to when, for example, 10,000 Afrikaner or Afrikaans-speaking people, predominantly Afrikaners, show up to the Voortrekker Monument to protest the Bella Act, some of the biggest pro-Afrikaans protest in the history of the language. maybe people should then say, well, maybe there's something here if so many Afrikaners and Afrikaans speakers are feeling threatened by a piece of legislation. Let's pause. Let's actually go back to the drawing board with this legislation and see, can't we adjust or amend it that these minority groups don't feel threatened? But that's not been the response.
That sounds like you're wanting to build a consensus with individuals outside of your own group.
Yes, but it's just not been happening. It's so just not. We've touched, the door's been slammed in our face.
Let me finish the question. That sounds to me like you're saying we want to build a consensus with other people to have empathy for us.
Through mutual recognition and respect, yes.
And you are saying at the same time, you're saying you want to opt out. That's why I'm asking you the question of what do you mean by opt out?
I don't say that's why we want to opt out. That's why I'm saying a lot of people are opting out, saying, well, what's the point of taking part in, for example, commentary processes for legislation if we're going to spend all our day, all of our time and resources to go voice our concerns and the government's going to say, thank you for voicing your concerns. None of them are going to be taken into consideration. Or, for example, what's the point of going to court, spending hundreds of thousands of rands to go fight a chant that chants about your murder in court only for the constitutional or the highest court to say, well, actually, it's fine. This chant is allowed for politicians to chant about your murder. At some point, if every single time you try to engage with the government, you get the door slammed in your face, cold shoulder, completely ignored. When you go to the courts don't protect you from incitement of violence. When you go through perfectly go through every single parliamentary process to voice your concerns about a piece of legislation, and the government doesn't take into account even a piece of your concern, at some point people are going to just start opting out and say, well, what's the point of participating? What's the point of even trying to reach consensus if the people that we are trying to engage with, the authorities that we are trying to engage with, seem to have no interest in reaching a consensus? They are only interested in executing power, in centralizing power in their own hands, pushing their own agenda. All the talk about consensus, taking into account people's different perspectives, it all seems to be window dressing. And I really don't blame people for becoming despondent and completely not just disappointed, but apathetic to a lot of these processes, if not a single one of these processes put in place is functioning as they are supposed to be functioning in regards to reaching a point of consensus, of bringing people closer to the middle in regards to, let's see if we can find an agreement. Because on every single front, Expropriation Act, Kill the Boer, Farm Murders, Bella Act, every one of these pieces of legislation, the outcome has always been, we are going forward 100% full steam with it, no matter how much you protest, no matter how much concerns you raise, no matter how many times you have requested to talk to the government to try and reach consensus. That's what I'm talking about. Is it just a complete stonewalling, a complete ignoring of people that have legitimate concerns about legislation and issues that affect them, that the government just says, we're in power, you're not in power, we make the rules, we're going forward full steam ahead, whether you like it or not. If you don't like it, you can leave. I think that's a very cold and immoral and inhuman way of approaching these types of things.
Do you believe that you are creating a consensus within the South African community? Do you believe that your fellow
the regular
South
people
Africans
out there?
Do you believe that your fellow South Africans are with you and believe in building and protecting what you want them to believe and protect? Mm. Do you believe you're building that consensus in the way that you have gone about this?
I think there's a major value of difference between the comment class or the people that you see writing in the media and the politicians and the elites and the regular guy in the streets. And I can only speak from our own personal experience. I've walked down Johannesburg CBD with my AfriForum shirt. I've walked in Pretoria crowded streets with a shirt that literally says AfriForum on my chest or AfriForum logo on my back. And never Have I received any derogatory remarks, even a dirty look, or even anyone responding in a negative way? I've received many positive reactions from both black and white. I've received many smiles, many nods of acknowledgement, many people even stopping me saying they saw me on television the other night. I don't think what you see on social media and what you read in the mainstream media and what you hear from politicians necessarily represents what the people on the ground feel. I don't think AfriForum I don't think any of my colleagues at AfriForum have been attacked or insulted or treated in any negative way by the average man on the street. We actually get very positive responses from the normal person out there from all races and backgrounds, because the normal person out there realizes there's a difference between the chatter that you see in the media and what actually is done on the ground. The normal person out there, when I explain AfriForum stances, explain the causes that we fight for, the issues that we have, the average person on the street has empathy for that. They have understanding for that. They understand what it means, or what it, they empathize with what it feels like to be targeted by legislation, to have violence incited against you, and to not be heard by the government in power. And I think that resonates.
So if then the ordinary South African on the street is on your side, who is responsible for the murders on farms? Are you saying that the government is sending people? If the people on the streets are on your side, who are the people that are perpetrating all of these violent acts against your community? Who are the people that are pushing for you to leave the country? Is it the government that is saying you should leave the country?
It's a bit of a strange remark, seeing as
it's not a remark, it's a question. Who are the people that are the perpetrators? Yes. Are you saying that the government is sending people, the politicians are sending people?
No, don't put words in my mouth, please.
I'm asking a question.
No, I know, but let me answer your question. If the majority of South Africans are against murder, that doesn't mean that you then act baffled when you say, but who's committing the murder epidemic in South Africa? Then the majority of South Africans are against murder, but there are criminals out there and there are hateful people out there. And this is the same way with farm murders. The majority of South Africans, I do believe, are against farmers. I do hope so. That it has been my experience that they are. But there are many psychopaths and hateful people out there, people possessed by inherent ethnic hate sometimes even, that you see come through in many of these farm murders. For example, there are many farm murders that involve gruesome levels of torture that is not normal crime. That comes from a place of genuine, deep felt hatred for your victim. You do not just, if you are there to steal someone's cell phone and to steal something from the farmer, you don't then drill holes through his wife's feet or drown his son in a bathtub of boiling water. That's something that comes from a place of hate. So on the one side, both things can be true at the same time. The majority of South Africans, definitely in my experience, are not in favor of farm murders, do not condone farm murders. But that doesn't mean that there is not many people out there that are psychopathic, that are hateful, that are genuinely out to cause chaos and to harm those that they hate.
This is not a conflation of criminality. It's not a conflation of criminality.
What do you mean a conflation?
That's being categorized as farm murders are being incited by politicians.
Well, farm murders are being incited by farm murders are being incited by politicians. Just because the majority of South Africans don't act on that incitement, that only a small amount act on that incitement, doesn't mean that it is not incitement. If a politician goes up on a podium and says, kill all foreigners, but only a handful of foreigners are killed, that is still incitement against foreigners. That's still xenophobic incitement of violence. So just because someone incites something and only a small amount of people act on that incitement does not take away from the crime of incitement. That's the judicial criteria for incitement of violence. It doesn't mean incitement of violence is not only a crime when people act on that incitement. Incitement of violence is a crime on its own. If I tell someone, go kill my neighbor, and that person says, I can't, it goes against my moral principles. I still incited violence against my neighbor, and he can take me to court for inciting violence against him. So when it comes to inciting violence against farmers in South Africa, inciting violence against minorities in South Africa, the fact that the majority of South Africans don't act on that incitement is normal. I mean, it would be incredibly disturbing if the majority of South Africans did act. But there are many psychopaths that do act on that incitement. I mean, I think it would be very strange to think that if you take a sample size of 60 million people and you incite violence amongst them, that some of them will not act on it. It's very clear. And I mean, even if nobody acted on it, you should not be inciting violence against your fellow man or your fellow citizen. That is wrong.
So my question again to you is, if you are building a consensus within the South African populace,
yes,
and the flaunted dream of democracy around the world is that the participation of the people in what they believe in will flow through, right? Why do you refuse to participate in that part? You're saying that's not going to work. We want something parallel. We're not participating as a political party because we are not heard by the politicians.
Yeah, but that's why I use the term supplementary with the parallel side, because we still encourage our members to go vote in mass. We don't tell them to disregard democracy or to not go vote or give up on democracy. We tell them, go vote, but that's not enough. Also get involved in your community. Also get involved with other ways of bringing about change alongside.
But building a consensus so your community is not enough. It's a minority. By the definition of it, your community on its own is not going to be able to override the will of the many. Democracy is the will of the many, right? And I'm
I'm advocating that there should be defense mechanisms in place to stop the tyranny of the majority.
But democracy is about the majority.
No, but there's something called the tyranny of the majority. Mm. If you vote, if 51% of people vote that the other 49% of people should have their property confiscated, is that democracy? Or is that tyranny of the majority? That's called tyranny of the majority.
And what I'm asking about building consensus with South Africans is, why are you struggling to build the consensus where the majority of South Africans will stand with you to support your rights? And do you believe that the way you have gone about selling yourselves works towards that?
But we're not fighting with the average South African on the street. We're fighting with those politicians that are inciting violence. We're fighting with those politicians like the president who doesn't even care to condemn a chant like kill the Boer, kill the farmer. We're fighting with those politicians that are pushing these destructive policies like the Expropriation Act. We have no problem with the man on the street, the average South African out there. As I said, if they had a problem with me, I would have had some very negative responses if I was walking around in the street with my AfriForum shirt. Oftentimes very much in a street where I'm by far the only white person or by very few white people in that street, and I don't get any negative responses. Why is that the case? So I think when it comes to particularly the way forward, that's exactly why there needs to be defense mechanisms, or there needs to be policies in place and checks and balances in place that protect minorities, particularly from the tyranny of the majority. I mean, when there's this metaphor that's always used, I mean, that democracy, one of the ways in which democracy gets perverted is through the tyranny of the majority, which can be summed up as three lions and two sheep voting on what we're going to have for breakfast this morning. That's the tyranny of the majority. That's where that term exists, because it has happened in many cases in history all across the world, and there needs to be safeguards against it. Otherwise, every time 51% in a democracy is going to vote, that we confiscate all the wealth from the 49% that lost the election, and that's a perversion of democracy.
So are you, at the moment, with what we see and hear happening in South Africa, Are your endeavors yielding the fruit you had hoped for?
Well, is very broad. I mean, in regards to particularly what's happening in the foreign policy space of South Africa and in the international space. Well, there's many talks of now targeted sanctions coming to target specifically politicians in South Africa, corrupt politicians, radical extremist politicians. That's a good thing. That's what AfriForum said is necessary. If there's no mechanisms in place to curb radical policies or extremist politicians, then you need pressure like that to be able to ensure that these politicians do not just continue to threaten people's rights or to threaten people's lives even.
So there has been no official response
from the United States?
No, from South Africa's government with regard to what we've seen in the past 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Specifically to AfriForum, mm-hmm. and you have continued, you're the public liaison officer, you have continued to champion this mm-hmm. cause, mm-hmm. and there has been no public response from the South African government mm-hmm. with regard to AfriForum's role in all of this. Do you believe mm-hmm. that this kind of pressure will yield a response to specifically AfriForum's issues?
From the South African government?
Yes.
I think there's a very strong chance that it will, especially when the issues that are being put on the table, that the spotlight is being shone on, is particularly issues like the race-based laws in South Africa and the Expropriation Act, two of the key issues that AfriForum cares very, and our membership and many South Africans and supporters of AfriForum care very deeply about. So I think there's a very strong chance that if the trajectory that we currently are on continues, that the South African government will have to make moves on those types of policies. They can't just
ask. But they've not acknowledged to date. They've not, other than the public mm-hmm. and the newspaper, as you call them, what did you say?
The mainstream.
The commentarati.
The commentariat. Yeah.
Other than mm-hmm. that, which is unofficial response, there has been no acknowledgement of AfriForum's role in getting us to where we are.
No, there's actually been from various politicians and people in the government have been blaming AfriForum and attacking AfriForum, accusing AfriForum of spreading misinformation, saying that AfriForum's lies abroad have caused this situation. It's a very convenient scapegoat because that means that the South African government doesn't have to take any responsibility itself.
Sorry, they can just frame. Some politicians.
There are many politicians.
No official response. Just individuals in their individual.
Well,
I
would think that ministers are an official response. When a minister makes comments, that's an official response from the government, seeing as he's an official government representative at the highest level. Mm-hmm. So there has been official responses, and I think it's understandable because it is a very, very nice scapegoat when you can say, well, this is all just one big misunderstanding due to misinformation, because the convenient thing about it all being a misunderstanding means that then there's nothing to resolve. There's no compromise that's going to have to be made. There's no agreement that's going to have to be made between the Trump administration and the South African government. Then you just have to, as the government seems to believe, put the real facts on the table and everything will be sorted out. But as we've seen, that's very clearly not the case. The Trump administration is not seeing this as just a simple misunderstanding. The Trump administration has pointed to very particular policy issues and domestic issues that they would like to see resolved, or where there's going to have to be a compromise for this relationship to be resolved or to be improved. So I think the South African government is playing a little bit the role of the ostrich when they are saying, well, it's just one big misunderstanding and we're going to sort this out by just talking to the United States. Well, I think the bad news for the South African government is it doesn't seem to be one big misunderstanding. There seem to be genuine issues that the Trump administration wants to resolve, but those issues are going to have to be resolved through compromise and to come to the table to make a deal. That's the whole.
And if not, what is AfriForum's play?
Well, in regards to if not, I mean, then if the South African government does not budge on anything, if it just goes, well, that's going to be incredibly unfortunate, because then if there's no compromise, if the South African government just arrogantly goes forward and say, we are not going to compromise or make a deal on anything, that message to the Trump administration is going to mean a major, major punishment towards South Africa from the United States. that it's just going to escalate the pain. It's just going to escalate the punishments. That's how the Trump administration operates. With every other nation that it has clashed with, those nations either came to the negotiating table and there was a deal made, as many nations did make, like Canada and Mexico and El Salvador. But other nations, like many African nations as well, are not talking about, for example, lowering their tariffs on American goods. That's coming to the table and making a deal. If South Africa just flat out refuses to make any deal, any concessions, any compromises, that's going to lead to a major world of hurt from the United States, which has the capacity to hurt South Africa very badly. And
Donald Trump will be president for 4 years. 4 years
yes,
from now.
Yes, and what if J.D. Vance becomes a president after him for another eight? That's 12 years. 12 years ago from now was 2013. That's the year the EFF was founded and was the year that I was still in high school. So, I mean, that's a lot of time.
And this is shared pain.
This is shared pain for everyone.
Your constituents,
everyone,
have the same experience of shared pain.
Yeah.
Are your constituents willing to live through that pain?
Well, a lot of them don't really have a choice. I mean, the vast majority of AfriForum members don't have the capacity or the ability to really emigrate to any other country. I mean, we don't have the details of the refugee program yet, so I don't know how many people that's going to take, what it's going to involve, how you qualify for it. So I can't really speculate there. That would be a waste of time. In the broad picture, there are millions of South Africans that can't just simply pack up and leave. The vast majority of South Africans and the vast majority of AfriForum members are locked into South Africa. I mean, that's why that through circumstance or through their own choice. And I mean, that's why AfriForum's, one of our mottos is building to stay. Our mission is to build a future in South Africa. We are locked into the South African future for as far as we can see into the future. And that's why we want to build a stronger South Africa, a better South Africa for everyone, because we see our future here for many generations into the future. And that's why we don't want to see South Africa punished.
So
we're doing everything in our ability to stop any punishment that punishes South Africa as a whole. That's why a major part of our focus from our delegation that went to the United States was, firstly, the message, do not sanction South Africa. Do not punish the citizens of South Africa. And do not kick South Africa out of AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, which again is... If you go read the criteria for the AGOA agreement, the South African government is breaking almost every single one of those criteria. The United States has every reason to kick South Africa out of it. AfriForum still try our best to save that agreement, because if South Africa is kicked out of that agreement, it's going to hurt millions of South Africans. But at the end of the day, if you go look at the criteria.
Very acutely,
yes,
the farming sector.
Yes.
Very acutely, the farming sector, yes, which is supposedly your constituency.
Well, a large part of our constituency. But if you go look at the criteria of AGOA, all of it's being broken. Firstly,
So have you cut off your nose to spite the face?
No, because our stance has never been that we should be kicked out of AGOA. And if we are kicked out, it's not AfriForum's fault. As I said, South African government is breaking every single one of the criteria of the agreement. AfriForum doesn't have control over whether the South African government agrees or meets the criteria or not. Let me give you some of the examples. First, one of the major criteria to qualify for AGOA, you have to protect private property rights and strengthen private property rights in your country. Secondly, you have to have a market-based economy with minimal government interference in your economy and in your labor sector and in the market. Thirdly, your government should not be showing sympathy or support for any international terrorist organization or governments, other states in the world that support international terrorism. Fourthly, your government should not, there should be active measures and consequences for politicians that are found guilty of corruption, and corruption should be fought in your country. All of those criteria are not being met by the South African government. The United States has every reason to kick South Africa out of AGOA, and that's why AfriForum is trying to save it. We're saying, even though we understand that the South African government is breaking all of these criteria, But this is going to hurt millions of South Africans. That's why we focused a large part of our delegation on trying to save AGOA. So if we are kicked out, there's no angle that you can look at the situation to say, well, this is AfriForum's fault. It's the South African government's fault that on that don't read the agreement that they signed, saying, well, why should the United States not kick South Africa out? That's the question that the South African government needs to answer. And at the moment, it seems like they're just ignoring the fact that AGOA has very specific criteria and they're not meeting any of them.
So, by your own words, the response that South Africa has received, the South African government has received, has not been the ideal response you were looking for. You were looking for targeted sanctions for individuals.
That seems to be where the United States are moving towards.
The response today is AGOA in jeopardy. The response today is higher tariffs for South African goods. The response has been, and this is not just South Africa, but around the world, has also been cutting off South Africa from various trade agreements, various support, US aid support, all of that, right? Which in turn has a negative impact on your members as well as
the whole South Africa, yes.
Yeah. In this particular instance, where what you have sought is not what you have received.
But
I'm not done.
Okay.
So what you went requesting is not what was sent your way. And now the environment in South Africa has created a situation where even your constituents have been negatively impacted. Do you believe that this endears you more to your constituents?
Well,
and the consensus that you're trying to build with South Africa?
I think anyone that looks at the situation honestly and clearly can see that it's not AfriForum's fault that we are in this situation. It's the South African government's fault and their actions and policies both domestically and abroad. I mean, the very fact that AfriForum, let's look at, for example, the reasons why a lot of this is happening. I mean, AfriForum didn't introduce the Expropriation Act. AfriForum didn't open the ICJ case against Israel. AfriForum didn't appoint an ambassador that insulted the president and half of the population of the country where he's stationed. AfriForum didn't push to have the streets where the U.S. consulate is located named after a terrorist that killed Americans. AfriForum didn't push the race laws that the president the race laws in South Africa. All of these concerns and things that the United States is pointing towards are not the actions of AfriForum. These are the
things. So is AfriForum taking? So then is AfriForum taking an opportunity to say we were part of raising awareness for all of this when it wasn't?
We did raise awareness about these issues, but we've been warning the South African government that a reaction from the United States is going to come at some time. We've been warning them for years that it is coming. The fact is, we wanted to ensure that when there is a spotlight shone on South Africa, that the facts are out there about what's happening in South Africa, because there's going to be a lot of propaganda from the government side, as there has been. Blows my mind the how powerful the ANC's propaganda machine is. But that's AfriForum's role, is to ensure that we knew that if the South African government for years goes down this road of just provoking the United States, instituting laws and executing laws that violate, for example, the criteria of agreements like AGOA, at some point a massive spotlight and attention is going to be put on South Africa and it's going to be negative from the United States. We wanted to ensure that when that happens, the United States has, at least from as far as AfriForum's capacity stretches, the right facts in regards to what is happening in South Africa to counter the obvious lies that are going to come and excuses that are going to come from the South African government. AfriForum has never claimed that what's happening today in South Africa is because Donald Trump was completely oblivious about what's happening in South Africa. And then when AfriForum informed him, now suddenly he realized there's something going on in South Africa. The United States has been aware about South Africa's deteriorating trajectory in regards to its relationship to the American government for years now. And AfriForum's role within that bigger picture is to ensure that when there is talk about farm murders, when there's talk about the race laws in South Africa, when there is the when the Expropriation Act and other threats to private property rights are at the center of this whole diplomatic crisis, that the right facts and information are out there, that the people that are discussing these matters know what's going on and can actually cut through a lot of the misinformation and disinformation that's out there, a lot of it coming from the South African government itself. So I think that's the best way to sum up our role within this whole picture, is we are shining a light on the facts about the issues that are inherently at the center of the whole crisis, that we're always going to be at the center of the whole crisis because it's the direction that the South African government has been moving in for decades now. We just wanted to ensure, and I think we did it very successfully, to ensure that at least the sources, reliable sources of information on all of these central issues to this crisis are available out there, not just to the public, but to anyone abroad, especially in countries taking an interest in South Africa, that it's there. Sources are there for them to use and reference when they are discussing these matters that are on the table at that time.
So if South Africa has been on this trajectory, mm-hmm. South Africa's renaming Sandton Drive to Leila Khalid, and America says we don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
It still doesn't change
mm-hmm.
Some of the issues that you are raising as pertinently important
yes.
to you.
But a lot of the issues that we are raising are being referenced by the Americans as well, like the Expropriation Act, like the race laws, like farm murders. These are issues that are at the center of the whole crisis. These are issues that are being discussed by the American representatives from the American government and the South African government's delegation that was there the other day. The leader of the South African government's delegation said that the issues that were discussed between them and the Trump administration were domestic issues, primarily domestic issues. Those domestic issues are threats to private property rights and threats to minorities and racially discriminatory laws. That's very clear.
Do you think that South Africa's experiment in having a community of South Africans
mm-hmm.
that can live peacefully side by side
mm-hmm.
can still be realized?
I totally believe it can. I mean, South Africa is a community of communities. Many communities living quite peacefully next to each other. I mean, South Africa is not a war zone. We have incredibly high crime rates. We have an incredibly violent crime rate problem, which the government is failing to address. But at the same time, the majority of that violent crime is not based on, for example, one cultural group wiping out another cultural group or a war between two different ethnicities breaking out. There's not a civil war going on in South Africa. There is actually quite positive relations between all of the other chaotic things going on. And I think, unfortunately, there's a media phenomenon at play here that creates a skew picture that a lot of people, unfortunately, then see a dirty lens that a lot of people then see South Africa through.